We're holding on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, second line. We discussed the Mishnah told us about a machlokas Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, how long. We actually had a three-way machlokas in the Mishnah about how long you're allowed to eat chametz on Erev Pesach. Everybody agrees, as we said, that you need a one-hour safety margin when it comes to having hanah, from that you don't need more than 1 hour's safety margin when it comes to having hanah from chametz. So therefore, you burn the chametz at the beginning of the sixth hour, and d'oraisa it becomes also at the beginning of the seventh hour. But we had Rav Meir said that's all the leeway you need. You can eat up until that point. Rav Yehuda had said you need an additional leeway of an hour, that you have to stop eating by the end of the fourth hour, 2 hours before Chatzos, because we said it might be a cloudy day and you're not going to know the time. And in general, Rav Yehuda figures you might be more you might have less of an ability to tell time, to know instinctively what time it is, than Rav Meir does. Then we had also an opinion in the Mishnah of Rav Gamliel, who says that it depends whether we're talking about cholin or truma. He says cholin you can eat until the end of the fourth hour, which is like Rav Meir, but truma you have an extra hour to eat. Chametz of truma you have an extra hour to eat till the end of the fifth hour, because after all you have a mitzvah to not destroy truma if you can help it. So now we're going to discuss who the halacha is like. Amar of Nachman Amar Rab halacha k'Rav Yehuda. The halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that you have to stop eating by the end of the fourth hour, then you have another hour to have hanah from it, and then you burn it, which is how we have it nowadays, which is why we have Sof Zman Achila, and then about an hour later, Sof Zman Bir. Omale Rava L'Rav Nachman. So Rava asked Rav Nachman, why are we saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda? The name of my halacha could have Meir. Shouldn't you say, Rebbe, that the halacha is like Rabbi Meir? De sasam lantana kavasei. Because after all, we have a stam Mishnah later in the perek that seems to go according to the Meir. And first of all, halacha is stam Mishnah. And second of all, on top of that, when we have a machloikas and then a stam, then the halacha is like a stam. So if we have a machlokas in our Mishnah, and later on we have a stam Mishnah according to one of those opinions, then the halacha ought to be like that. So what is that Mishnah? The Tanan we learn at the beginning of the next parak. Kol shah shemuta lechol, as long throughout all the time that you're allowed to eat chametz, machil, you're allowed to feed it to animals and whatnot, implying, and when you can't eat it, then you can't feed it anymore. Now, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that doesn't work. According to Rabbi Yehuda, during the fifth hour, you're not allowed to eat it, but you're allowed to give it to animals. So that Mishnah seems to be more like Rabbi Meir, who says that the time of eating and the time of having hanah are the same amount of time, the first 5 hours of the day. The answer is hahi lav stamahu. That's not really a stam Mishnah. Like Rav Meir, mishum dekashim mutter. Because the Gemara there is going to ask, if you're talking, the expression in the Mishnah again is kol shasha mutter lechol. As long as you're allowed to eat machil, then you're allowed to feed it to animals and so forth. So we have a problem in the next perek. When we have that Mishnah, we're going to ask, if it just meant like Rav Meir, then the expression should be just the expression should be shorter. As we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, you're supposed to always la'olam yishana adam derech katzara. You should always teach things in the shortest possible way. If it meant to be like Rav Meir, then the expression should be kol shosh oichel machil. As long as you can eat, you can feed. Why using the word mutter? When you have mutter, it implies as long as there's somebody else who's able to eat it, you maybe not, but there's somebody else who's allowed to eat it, then machil, shemutter, that there's some other third party who can eat it. So that wouldn't be like Rav Meir. That would actually be like Rav Gamliel. That would actually be like Rav Gamliel, that there's a point in the day when a koyan is still allowed to be eating his truma, but you, Yisrael, are not allowed to eat your cholin anymore. However, at that point, you can still feed your cholin to animals. Okay, well, then the question is, v'neim amar halacha k'Rav Gamliel. In that case, shouldn't you say the halacha is like Rav Gamliel, the havale machria? Because after all, leaving aside for a moment the matter of the stam Mishnah, we'll take that up a second. Tosfos is going to discuss that point about the Stam Mishnah. But for a different reason, the halacha should be like Rav Gamliel of our Mishnah, the Havale Machria, because he's a Machria, he's taking a middle ground. And usually there's a concept in halacha called halacha kedivrei hamachria. Why the halacha should be like the Machria, one idea is because like this, you have Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. So let's consider, for example, when Rambam Gamliel is saying that, when Rambam Gamliel is saying that chulin, you can eat till the end of the fourth hour, then as far as that detail, you have a majority. You have Rambam Gamliel and Rabbi Meir against, when Rambam Gamliel says that chulin you can eat only until the end of the fourth hour, that's like Rabbi Yehuda. So then you have Rambam Gamliel and Rabbi Yehuda are a majority against Rabbi Meir in that detail. When Rambam Gamliel says you can eat truma until the end of the fifth hour, then in that detail he's going like Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Yehuda didn't make such a distinction. So then you have Rambam Gamliel and Rabbi Meir are a majority against Rabbi Yehuda. So that's a reason for the halacha to be like the Machria, because on either side of what he's saying, you have him together with the other Tana makes a roiv. So therefore, shouldn't the halacha be like Rambam Gamliel, that there's a difference between chulin and truma? The answer is Amalei Rambam Gamliel lav Machria. Rambam Gamliel is not actually a machria because tam de nafshe kamar. He's saying something. He's saying a reason of his own. We're actually going to learn again. We're actually going to learn this concept again at the very end of our perek, that they're called ein hachras shlishis machras. That a third opinion is not necessarily a hachra. Because in other words, Rashi explains if you had Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda mentioning cholin and truma in their statements, if you had Rabbi Meir saying whether cholin or truma you can eat till the end of the fifth hour, and whether cholin or truma you can and Rabbi Yehuda saying whether cholin or truma you can eat until the end of the fourth hour, then it would mean okay, we acknowledge there might be a reason to distinguish between cholin and truma. However, we don't consider that to be a valid distinction. So then Rambam Gamliel can come and say, you know what? You guys do accept that there is cholin versus truma. So then I'm going to actually make that distinction and say one has a different deadline than the other. But since they didn't mention that at all, then it means they're not even thinking in terms of cholin and truma. So therefore, when Rambam Gamliel comes and says cholin and truma, then and says a difference between them, then that's not a hachra. That's giving a third opinion that has nothing to do with either of the previous ones. Rabbi Nachmanu gives a different explanation of it. He says you have to look at the Seder Azmanim. Rambam Gamliel is a generation or two before Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rambam Gamliel is from the same generation as Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, the Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are among Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, so they're a later generation. Rambam Gamliel is obviously not referring to their respective opinions because they came after him. So therefore, he's not saying it as a hachra. Therefore, he's saying therefore he's not coming to be machria their opinions. So that's not a reason to say the halacha is like Rambam Gamliel. Now, what about the Stam Mishnah? So what about the Stam Mishnah? So Tosfos says, you're right. If it was from the point of view of the Stam Mishnah, maybe we could say the halacha is, we could say maybe the halacha is like Rambam Gamliel. And fine, even if we don't say, so we're not sure whether the word mutter in that Mishnah, whether we can be medayik from that. Okay, either way, it would mean like Rambam Meir or like Rambam Gamliel. It wouldn't mean, but how do we get the halacha being like Rabbi Yehuda? So Tosfos says, the truth is, you're right. The Gemara could have asked that. However, the Gemara is now going to give an Ibois Ema. The Gemara is going to give another reason now why the halacha should be like Rabbi Yehuda and not like any of the other two opinions. And once we have that, then automatically the matter of the Stam Mishnah falls by the wayside. So the Ibois Ema, so another reason why to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Rav de Omer ki haitana. Rav, who's saying, Rav Nachman is saying, in the name of Rav, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, is basing himself on the opinion of the following Tana in a Braisa. The Tanya, Arba Osa Shechalias for Shabbos, if the 14th of Nissan comes out on Shabbos, Mevarin as Akol Malifna Shabbos, we get rid of all of the Chometz before Shabbos, like we're going to have this year, the serfin trumas tmeis tloyas atahurus. So we burn all the truma that's chametz, whether it's actually tame, whether it's tolery, it's suspended. We're not sure whether it's tame or tahur. Where the usual rule is that we have to leave it until it spoils or until Erev Pesach comes, and then we burn it with the chametz and tahurus, even if it's truma tahura. Now, if it's truma tahura, you're really not supposed to be burning it. Again, you have a mitzvah to preserve truma tahura. But Tosfos says over here, even though daraisi, you could say it's enough to do bittul. But the fact of the matter is, it's going to end up becoming osur. It's going to end up being unavailable to eat. So therefore, Therefore, you're allowed to burn it. As in fact, we're going to have in the next Mishnah, we're going to talk about the whole matter of burning Truma Tmeya with Truma Tahora, which is going to lead us into the whole discussion of the details of the halachas of Truma Vatara. So we see, in other words, that when it has to be burned anyway, then there's not such an issue there's not such an issue even though it's Tahor. Anyway, continues the Braisa. You leave over from the truma that is tahor, mazin shtei sodas, two meals worth, so that you can eat it until the end of 4 hours in the day. So we see that even truma, we're talking only until the end of 4 hours of the day, which is like Rabbi Yehuda, which is a reason to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and the Gemara is going to go on, the Braisa is going to go on and say that the halacha is like this opinion. There is actually a machlokas between the Rif and the Rif on one side and a number of Rishonim on the other side. Do we mean over here, what about when it comes to Cholin? Do you have to dafka leave only Mazen Shtei Sodas, or could you leave even more? Maybe when we're saying you have to burn on Erev Pesach, maybe it's only the Truma, because after all, Truma you have only Koyanim can eat, and only if they're Tahor, etc. So therefore, you might not, if you leave over too much, you might not have enough people available to eat it. As opposed to Cholin, there's plenty of people available to eat it, so maybe therefore you can leave over more than Mazon Shtei Sodas, and if you have extra, then okay, then you'll dispose of it Shabbos morning. Or do we say that no, we're mentioning Truma over here because that's what's relevant to our sugya? We're still talking Erev Pesach Shchalis B'Shabbos, right? So another way of looking at it is that even when it comes to the Cholin, also you burn most of it before Shabbos and you leave over only Mazon Shtei Sodas that you're going to eat on Shabbos, which is how we do it. Another interesting point in that is, what do you mean shtei sodas? What aren't you supposed to do? So Tosfos actually takes the second opinion. Tosfos says that chulin you can leave over any as much as you want because of chulin merubin. Anyway, why two sodas? Rashi, don't you need three sodas on Shabbos? So Rashi points out that Erev Pesach, you're not allowed to eat mina mincha olamayli. You're not allowed to eat after mincha time on Erev Pesach, whether it's a weekday or whether it's Shabbos, because as we're going to learn at the end of our Masechta in the last perek, you want to have an appetite for the Seder. So you're not going to be able to eat a third soda anyway. Now, Rashi is saying that. It turns out that actually there's quite a bit of discussion about that among the Rishonim, what you should do as far as Shalosh Sodas on that Shabbos. One possibility is maybe what you should do is you should divide up your morning meal. You eat, then you bench, then later on you wash again, all before the fourth hour of the day, which is the time during which you can eat chametz, and then you have your third meal of Shabbos. So even though usually Shalosh Sodas should be in the afternoon, but here you have it in the morning, B'les Breira, and then you bench. So that's one way of doing it. On the other hand, some of the Rishonim are not very happy with that. First of all, Shalosh Sodas is supposed to be in the afternoon. Second of all, you're making brachas unnecessarily. You're benching after the first one, knowing that you're going to wash again and have some more, only for the sake of the third meal of Shabbos. You can't be doing that. So other possibilities are maybe you could do it in the afternoon, but you could use, for example, matzah that you can't anyway use for the Seder. For example, you could use matzah ashira. You could use matzah ashira, for example, matzah that was made with juice or whatever, which you're not allowed to use for the Seder. So there is that. On the other hand, many people, including us, have the minhag that you don't eat matzah ashira, that you don't eat matzah ashira on Erev Pesach either, or throughout Pesach for that matter. So then another alternative is, on that Shabbos, don't make Shalosh Sodas with bread as you usually would. You make it with fruit. You make it with fruit or meat or eggs or what have you. And that way you're Yotze Shalosh Sodas. So even though now you have b'chlal, you know, do you have to have bread for Shalosh Sodas is itself another question. We know that our minhag, it says in Hayom Yom, is that we're not particular to eat bread, since it says Hayom Loi. But we still eat something. So for us, it's less of an issue because even during the rest of the year, Shalosh Sodas doesn't always involve bread. But for those who are careful to use bread, they have to use one of the, either they have to forego that and just use meat or fish or fruit or whatever, or they have to use matzah ashira, or the other possibility is they make the third soda in the morning again by splitting their meal into two.
Rachel.
Okay, so if you have dessert, yeah, if you have what? That I don't, that people, some people bench and then eat dessert. I don't know about that. I mean, we learned in brachos that that dessert, even if it's b'seicha soda, even if you eat it before benching, it's not dvorim aboy machmas asuda. So you'd still make a separate bracha on them regardless. Anyway, right. Yeah, lechoda. Then I mean, yeah, it seems like it. Okay. Anyway, divir Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda ish bar Tosa sha'amar mishum Rabbi Yehuda mishum Rabbi Yeshua. So all of this that we just said is the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda ish bar Tosa in the name of Rabbi Yeshua, that you burn almost all of the chametz before and maybe the cholin as well before on erev Pesach and sorry on erev Shabbos, which is the 13th of Nisan, a day ahead of when you usually would, and you leave just enough to be able to eat on Shabbos. And the point is that we're burning all the truma, even the truma that's tahor, whatever is more than two meals worth. Amru loy, so the other chachamim said to him, how could you do that? Tahoras lo yisofu, you shouldn't be burning truma tahora on yud gimel nisin. It's not also yet. Shemi matzal v'hanoichlin. After all, you might find koyanim who can eat it, and then you've destroyed truma for that. You've destroyed truma for no good reason. Amru lahen, so he says, kvabikshu v'leimatzu. New, obviously, they already looked for. They already looked for people to eat it. Shabbos new orchim are not going to come because you can't travel from outside the tchum. He already knows who in town is going to come to him, and he knows already if he's leaving Mosen Shtei Sodas, means he knows already how many guests who are calling him he expects to have that he could feed them the truma. So they say, okay, maybe you have Koyanim who were staying outside the wall. Maybe Friday night, they didn't manage to make it all the way into the city. So as we learned in Eruvin, they stayed some distance outside the city. And then on Shabbos, they're going to be able to, they're still within 2,000 amas of the city. And Shabbos day, they'll be able to walk over. And then he'll have Koyanim and he can give them the truma to eat. So why are you destroying it on Erev Shabbos when you don't know that? Amalahem, Sir Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda answers them, Lidivrechem, nu, and according to your own logic, why are you only asking about Truma Tahora? Af Tluyas Leisofu, maybe we shouldn't be burning the Truma Tluya either, where it's a suffix, whether it's Tomei or Tahor. Maybe we shouldn't be burning it on Erev Shabbos either. Shema Yave Eliyahu Vietarin, because after all, Eliyahu Anavi might come and tell us after all that they're Tahor. We know, by the way, Eliyahu, we can't necessarily have Eliyahu tell us what the halacha is in a certain case. I mean, we have the concept where we say teiku is tishvi yataretz, koshius v'boyis is going to give us answers. But we know definitely, though, that there's a question. You know, we can say Eliyahu, we can accept halachas from him on the grounds of him being a Talmud Chacham, but not on the grounds of him being Eliyahu Anavi specifically. But when it comes to knowing a suffix, like in this case, did it actually become Tamei or did it not? Did it Sheretz touch it or what have you? For that kind of thing, we can rely on Eliyahu Navi for sure. Even in his capacity as a ruchniistic being. So therefore, so he might come. Yeah. Amruloi, so the Chachamim answered Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda, Kvam muftach lahen liYisrael. We learned this in Eruvin as well. The Jewish people are already guaranteed she'ein Eliyahu ba loy ba'avi Shabbosus v'loy ba'avi Yom Tovim, that Eliyahu is not going to come and announce that Mashiach is going to come on Erev Shabbos or on Erev Yom Tov, mipnei ha'torach, because of the burden of it, because people are busy preparing for Shabbos and Yom Tov, and that's going to interfere with their Shabbos preparations. With that said, now you know the Rebbe once pointed out in a sicha, you know, I'm sure the Jewish people are willing to forego that tircha. Abi Eliyahu Anavi should come and Mashiach should come already. There is, I saw something on this from Shlomo Zalman where he says, okay, so the vort is that if the time that the Eibishter decided that Eliyahu is going to come happens to come out on an Erev Shabbos or an Erev Yom Tov, then Hashem will move up and he'll come one day earlier. He'll come on Thursday instead, and then there won't be any Torah. Anyway, the point is, therefore, so you don't have to worry that Eliyahu is going to come on that Erev Shabbos Yud Gimel Nisan and say that this Truma Tluya is in fact Tahor. So therefore, the Chachamim say to Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda that we can say you can burn the Truma Tluya because there's no chance that between now and Erev Pesach it's going to be declared Tahor. But you still have the question, what about according to you, why are we burning Truma Tahora if there might be people outside the city that might come in on Shabbos and be able to eat it? Amru, however, the Chachamim said, Lo Zazum Misham, they didn't move away from there. Ad Shekavu Halacha Kerab Lazim and Yehuda Ishbar Tosa Shomam Mishum Mebeshua. They established that Halacha is like him. So when we say the halacha is like him, my lav afilu lechol, wouldn't that mean when we say we establish the halacha like him, even as far as the deadline for eating it, where the detail that he says that you leave until dalad shoyz, which is like Rabbi Yehuda, so that would show the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah. The answer is levayer, not necessarily. Maybe what it means, they establish the halacha is like him, is the detail about whether you should burn Truma Tahora on Erev Pesach, or should we leave it until Shabbos morning and dispose of it some other way, if it wasn't eaten. But maybe as far as the 4 versus 5 hours, maybe not necessarily did they establish the halacha like him. So there's no solid proof from that braisa that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. However, the Gemara continues, the af Rebbe Savala Hodder of Nachman. However, we see that Rebbe also agrees with Reb Nachman, which in turn means the halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda, that you can only eat until 4 hours. Namely, the Omer Rav and Omer Abada, Maisa Ba'odim Echad Sheifke Diski of Malaya Chometz Etzio Yochan and Chakuka. It happened once that a certain person was mafkid a diskia, which means a diskia is, Rashi says, is two bags, diskia. We learned in, disakia maybe, whatever. We learned in Erevin that di or dioi is a prefix meaning two. Sakia is like sacks. So therefore it means a double sack. Like for one side of the animal and the other, exactly. So somebody was mafkid a double sack like that, malaya chametz, full of chametz, etzel Yochanan Chakuka, by Yochanan Chakuka. Now we've met Yochanan Chakuka earlier on Gimel Amud Beis, where we had the little story over there where he went out to the villages to check on the tvua, and the wheat crop hadn't been so good, and so he told them the barley is good, and they told him to go tell it to the animals, and then because Sa'urim is not really my chaladim, etc. So somebody was trying to avoid the bad news, but they told him that there's a better way to say it. Anyway, so somebody had deposited for safekeeping this diskia full of chametz by him. V'nakvua achborim, mice had made holes in the bags, so therefore some of the chametz is getting lost. Uvol lifnei Rebbe. So now the problem is not only there are mice attacking the bag and getting some of the chametz out, but the problem is also it's Erev Pesach. So if you're going to sell, now you have a rule like this. We're going to learn soon a Mishnah from Bava Metzia, from Hamafkid, that says that what happens if somebody deposits food by somebody else. So we have those rules, those amounts that the Mishnah says you can expect that it's going to lose a certain percentage of its volume every year because you have between mice and spoilage and whatever. So if the amount that's getting lost is less than that, then you leave it alone. But if it's getting lost more than that, then you have a machlokas Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim in the Mishnah over there what to do about it. So in this case, some of it was getting lost, but not enough for it to be Yosem Kedechas Ronon, more than the expected amount that should be lost. So therefore the Maharam Chalava says on that grounds, there's not necessarily yet a reason to sell it, especially because now it was Erev Pesach, and Rashi points out on Erev Pesach, if you try to sell chametz, nobody's going to buy it at full price because they only have a couple of hours to eat it. Necessarily, it's going to be bought at a discount. So the result is if Yochanan goes and sells these bags of chametz to somebody, and then sets aside the money so the guy can eventually collect his money, it's going to be a lot less money than the chametz is otherwise worth because it's going to be sold at a deep discount. So what should he do? So Yochanan Chakuka came to Rebbe to ask him what to do. Shah Rishona Omalei Hampton, during the first hour of the day, he told him wait because the owner himself might show up and take it. Shnia Omalei Hampton, the second hour, the same thing. Shlishis Omalei Hampton, Revius Omalei Hampton. During the whole first 4 hours of the day, he's telling him, wait and see if the owner shows up. Chamishis Omalei, when it came the fifth hour, he tells him, Tseyu Moichra Bashuk, go and sell it in the marketplace while it's still Mutar Bahana. Now, my lav v'nachrim k'Rabbi Yehuda, l'chura, when he says go sell it in the marketplace, must mean to goyim, and that would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. At this point, Jews can't eat it anymore, but you're still allowed to sell it. It's still mutar b'hana, so go sell it to goyim. And we would assume that it's goyim, because otherwise, if it was to Jews, why does he need to sell it at all? He himself can figure out how much it's worth and then keep it himself. So, and he could have done that earlier in the day even. So the fact that Rebbe is first telling him to go sell it now in the fifth hour, l'chora, that means to goyim. And also then that would mean that then it'll get a normal price because the goyim don't have a deadline to eat it. The answer is loy, not necessarily, so therefore could have Yehuda. So therefore that would be like Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is Amar Rabbi Yosef, loy, li Yisrael could have mayor. Not necessarily. Rebbe may mean that you still sell it to Jews, and like Rebbe Meir says, because they still have till the end of the fifth hour to eat it. So at that point, don't wait any longer, because otherwise it's going to be completely lost. Otherwise, it's going to be osur b'hanah, and the guy is going to lose his whole thing. Which, by the way, there's an interesting point that the achronim discuss. What happens if he doesn't sell it? Is he chayev to pay for it? So there's a discussion back and forth about it among achronim. The Alter Rebbe brings in this question, and the Alter Rebbe brings in this connection, an achron, the Choik Yaakov, who says that maybe there's a difference between whether he's a shomer chinam and a shomer sachar. The Alter Rebbe doesn't like that distinction, and he says no. Either way, the fact is, I think so. So the Alter Rebbe says that no, it's not a matter of he's going to be chayev to pay for it if he didn't. It's just he's failing to do the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Like this, when he's selling it, he's anyway taking it out of the reshus of the owner. So you can't call that part of his responsibility as a shomer to sell it. But you can say that he's preventing the other guy from suffering a loss. So he's mekayim the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda if he does that. Anyway, so no, not necessarily is the story with Rebbe meaning that he should be selling it to goyim. Maybe he can still sell it to Jews, and they still have till the end of the fifth hour to eat it. Well, at this point, why would he want to sell it to Jews? You're asking. The point is that he could. The point is that it's acceptable maybe still to sell it to Jews. We can't necessarily learn from this that it means halacha is like Rebbe Yehuda. Before we continue, by the way, just to mention briefly, so we mentioned before that mice were making holes in it. Why is that point important? So again, we said Maharam Chalava says the point is that even though some of the chametz was getting lost already, that itself wasn't a valid enough reason to sell it yet earlier in the day because it wasn't more than the expected loss of it. On a Kabbalistical level, though, Rabbi Levick, the Rebbe's father, has a discussion about this Gemara as a side note in the course of a discussion about something else altogether. He mentions the two story with Yochanan and Chakukha, the one earlier in Arma Sechta and the one here. He draws a comparison or a connection between Yochanan and Chakukha and the Malachim of Edom that are at the end of this week's parasha, the eight Malachim of Edom, Vayomas Vayimloch, the Malachim of Tohu, of Shvir Sakelim. One of those kings is Baal Chonon ben Achbar. So Baal Chonon is the Umaseh of Yochanan. Yochanan is Hashem is gracious. Baal Chonon is Baal is gracious. So that particular king, that particular Koyach HaToma is the opposite number of Yochanan Chakukah. So he's the one who's mafkid, the chometz by him, in order that he should be able to accomplish Berurim with it. But this Baal Chonon is Ben Achbar, Maloshan Achbar, a mouse. So that's why you have, that's why it came out that mice were gnawing at it. And he has a whole long arichus over there explaining how it relates to some of the other Malchei Edom over there. A very, very interesting piece. Anyway, Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, Eli Yisrael, if anyway you're selling it to Jews, Nishkalei l'nafshei, then why does Yochanan Chakukah have to go out to the marketplace and sell it to other Jews? He might as well figure out the value of it and keep it for himself and eat it before the end of the hour. The answer is Mishrum Chashta. The answer is fine. From the point of view of the dinim of Chometz, he could do that. But from the point of view of Chashad, that people might suspect him, he shouldn't do that because people might suspect that he's undervaluing it as it is. It's going at a discount. But like this, they might figure that he's undervaluing it in order to be able to get more, in order not to have to pay so much out of his own pocket. D'tanya, as we learn similarly in a braisa, gaboy tzedaka she'en lam aniyim l'chalek, gaboy tzedaka, suppose they collected pennies and they collected copper coins from different people. Now, they don't happen to have any aniyim around to give it out to. Copper coins eventually are going to corrode and rust. So therefore, Potin Lachaudim, therefore they were allowed to exchange the coins for larger coins, but only for other people, v'ain Potin La'atzman, not for themselves. Because you don't want people to be choshed that they undervalued the amount of copper coins in order that they don't have to pay out as much in silver coins. No, in other words, these are the gaboyt staka. So let's say they collected 100 pennies. What? Means, in other words, so for example, they collected 100 pennies. Now they want to exchange it for a dollar. So they shouldn't go themselves and say, okay, I have a dollar of my own in my wallet, so I'll exchange it and I'll keep the 100 pennies for myself. No, because people might be choshed. Not that we're choshed necessarily, but people. Exactly. Yeah. So keep in mind also, you know, it wasn't like nowadays where a penny is a penny and a dollar is a dollar and that's that. In those days, it also depended on the weight of the coins. So therefore, you could have that, they could suspect him, therefore, that he's bedavka underweighing the coins in order to be able to, yeah. So therefore, you should do that. Similarly, gaboy tamchoy, similarly, when it comes to people, the gaboyim who are collecting for the tamchui, which is the tzedakah where they would collect food from people, from balabatim, and then give out ready-made food to the aniyim. So same thing, she'ein lam aniyim l'chalik, if they don't have aniyim to divide, to give out the food to, mochrin l'achodim, they should sell the food to other people, ve'ein mochrin l'atzman, they shouldn't sell it to themselves. Same reason, mishum shenema v'ayisim nekiyim me'ashem u'yisrael. As the pasuk says, you should be clean in the eyes of Hashem and of Yisrael, meaning that you have to act in a way that avoids people being chosh at you. So the same thing over here. Yes, from the point of view of the halachas of Pesach, and maybe even of the halachas of Pikodin, Yochanan Chakukah, if he's selling to Jews, might as well just sell it to himself. But there is the problem of chashad, and that would be why Rebbe is telling him to go and sell it in the marketplace to other people. But not necessarily does that show the halachas like Rebbe Yehuda, that now in the fifth hour, Yochanan and other Jews can't eat it. However, the Gemara says, "Amalei of Adam Amastam Rabbi Yosef Beferush Amrit Lon Seu Moichon LaNochrim Kirab Yehuda." You explicitly told us, Rabbi Yosef, that when Rabbi said Seu Moichon was LaNochrim means sell him to Goyim Kirab Yehuda, like Rabbi Yehuda says. So you clearly told us previously that it does imply the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and that he was saying Dafka sell him to Goyim, don't sell them to Jews, because at this point it's too late. At this point it's too late to sell them to Jews; they can't eat it anymore. So now let's get into a little more discussion about that.
Is that the conclusion?
Well, so far that's what we're saying. So far we're saying we were trying to prove how we know the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. So now we're saying, based on the story in and of itself doesn't necessarily demonstrate, because it doesn't clearly say whether Rebbe told Yochanan to sell the chametz to Goyim or to Jews during that fifth hour. But Rabbi Yosef had clearly told us Talmudim that it means l'nochrim, and therefore that would demonstrate the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. That therefore Rebbe is telling Yochanan it's too late to sell it to Jews because no Jew can eat it anymore. Now at this point, go sell it to Goyim. Which shows, therefore, that there's a certain time during which you can't eat chametz, but you can still sell it. That would be like Rabbi Yehuda.
And that would be which hour?
During the fifth hour.
It's a very weak proof.
It's a proof because Rabbi Yosef said explicitly that his version of the story, the way he learned from his rebbeim, was that he's to go sell it to Goyim, and the reason why to sell it to Goyim would be not to Jews, because at this point Jews can't eat it anymore. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Keman Ozla Hoshmaita de Rebbe. This discussion involving Rebbe, this story where Rebbe is saying to go and sell the Pekodon, even though normally you as a Shomer should not be selling the Pekodon, but in this case, it's going to be completely lost if you don't. Not so much because of the mice, but rather because, again, it's going to come the fifth hour and it's going to be also Bahana. Keman Ozla Hoshmaita, which tana does this Shmaita de Rebbe, does this statement of Rebbe go like? Kirab Shimon Gamliel. It goes like Rab Shimon Gamliel, his father. The Tanan, we learn in that Mishnah in Hamafkid. Hamafkid Peris Eitzo Chaveri. If a person deposits fruit or produce by somebody else for safekeeping, Afilu Hein Avudin, even if that produce is getting lost or destroyed, lo yiga behen, he shouldn't touch it because it's not his to do anything with. He should wait until the owner comes back and decides what he wants to do with it. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm a mochrin bevestin, Rav Shimon Gamliel says you sell them in Beis Din, meaning not necessarily literally in Beis Din, but it means, in other words, Tosfos says that you have to have Beis Din evaluate the value of it, and then you go and sell it at that price. Because that way you're accomplishing Hashavas Abeda, because otherwise it's going to be completely lost. Again, as we said, the Alter Rebbe holds that whether he's a Shema Chinam or whether he's a Shema Sachar, it's not that if he doesn't, the other guy can take him to Beis Din and say you were Preshea. He doesn't have the ability to do that, but the guy should do it from the point of view of Hashavas Aveda. Amale Abaya, however, Abaya says, how can we show, how does that prove that Rebbe is holding like Reb Shimon Gamliel? The Lav Itmar Allah, wasn't there said about it, which is in the Gemara over there? Amar Rabbi Baba Chana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Lo Shanu Ela Bichdei Chesroinan. When do we say that the Tanakama says you shouldn't sell it is only if the amount that's getting lost is less than Kidei Chesroinan, only that less than the expected amount that produce usually shrinks by year. You usually have, again, between mice and spoilage and other things like that, you usually have, for example, so the Mishnah gives amounts over there. For example, for wheat and barley, the expected loss is what is it over there? Tishas Chatzoy Kabin Lakur. 4.5 Kabin per Kur. There are 180 Kabin a Kur. So it comes out to about 1/40th or so. Per year, you can expect it's going to shrink by that amount. So if it's shrinking, but not by that amount, then the Tanakama is saying leave it alone for two reasons. The Gemara discusses over there why you should leave it alone. One is because Roitz Adon Bekav Shaloi, a person would rather have his own produce, even more than Tisha Kab and Shochaber. Right? The other reason the Gemara says over there is because the owner may have designated from afar this produce to be Truma and Meiser on behalf of other produce of his, and therefore, if you go sell it, then you're preventing that from working. Anyway, avo yos mekadei chasroinon, but if it's missing more than kadei chasroinon, if it's missing more than the expected amount, then everybody agrees mochrin based in. Everybody agrees you would sell it based in. And Tosfos points out over here now, if it's only b'chdei chesroinan, then why is Rav Shimon Gamliel saying go sell it in Beis Din? It's less as it is when you're keeping it in storage. It's not expected to shrink by that amount, so it's expected to shrink more than that amount. So why should you be selling it? So Tosfos says, actually, let's say, for example, if you prorate it, if you say it's supposed to be missing on average, let's say 4.5 kabin per year, that means you're talking, it's during 12 months of the year, it's expected to lose about 1/3 of a calf per month. So let's say you check at the end of 1 month and you find that unexpectedly half a calf is gone. So if it continues like that throughout the year, it's going to be more than kadei chesroinan. But the fact is, it's not yet at the actual amount. It hasn't yet reached 4.5 calvim. We're just thinking ahead that it's going to if it continues at this rate. That is when Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying, go ahead and sell it, because if it continues at that rate, it's going to be more than kadei chesroinan. But whereas the Tanakhama says, the fact is it's only 1 month so far. Okay, it was higher than average, and maybe next month it'll be lower than average, so therefore don't sell it yet. Anyway, but the point is, when it's more than kadei chesroinan, when it's more than 4.5 kavim per kur per year, then definitely even the Tanakhama says that you sell it. How much more so over here, because it's going to be completely lost. It's going to be osabana. So therefore, no question about it. No question about it. Even according to the Chachamim, Rebbe can be telling Yochanan Chakukah to go sell it. And as we said, he was telling him to sell it to Goyim, which implies that it's during a time, during the fifth hour already, when it's too late to sell it to Jews, because they can't eat it, and all he can do is sell it to Goyim. There is, by the way, in this connection, I mean, we have to ask, why does he have to ask what to do anyway? I mean, the fact is, if he has chametz around his house, he's going to be over on Yochanan Chakukah himself. He's going to be over on Bal Yorah, Bal Yimotzah, having chametz around his house, won't he? Not necessarily, because we learned earlier in the Perek that it depends whether he accepted Achrayus on it or not. If he didn't accept Achrayus on it, and we actually had the Machlokas Aposkim, we actually had a Machlokas Rishonim over there, whether we're talking about as a Shomachin, as to the degree of responsibility of a Shomachinam or of a Shomachachar or of a Shoyal, but whatever, he didn't accept Achrayus for it, so it's not considered his, so he's actually not over. So therefore, he could have it in his house. It's not a problem of him being over on Bal Yorah Bal Yimotzah. It's not necessarily a problem that the owner is going to be over on Bal Yorah Bal Yimotzah either, because that depends whether you say he's over on that when it's not in his possession, as is the case over here, when it's in Yochanan Chakukah's house. So from that point of view, there's no problem. But the fact is, it's going to be Chametz Tra'av all of our Pesach, and it's going to be Osabana, which is why Rebbe is telling him to sell it. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda had said that they used to put two chalos of chametz from a korban todah on top of the itzva in the Beis Hamikdash, and that would be a signal to everybody when you're allowed to eat chametz and when you have to burn it, etc. So Toni Tana Kamed Rav Yehuda, a Tana taught this Mishnah in front of Rav Yehuda, in front of Rav Yehuda, the Amora, and taught that the Mishnah says, Al Gav Ha Itztava, that he would put the chal. The Itztava is not really, well, sort of, I guess. Those, when you have on the side over there, here. One second. When you have these things over here, yeah, these kind of represent the Eitz device over here. You have the idea is under here. This is meant to represent the wall of the Harabayis. You would have over here. There would be like benches inside, and then you have columns in front, and above it you would have a roof. So this way you could sit there even in bad weather, let's say. So that's the thing. So you can have like this. There's Gav Ha'itztava, which would be on top of the benches, and then you have Gag Ha'itztava with a gimel, which would be the roof. So let's go back. So let's go back to the Gemara and we'll see. So a Tana had taught a Braisa in front of Rav Yehuda, the Amora, al Gav Ha'itztava, that he would place the chalas on the Gav Ha'itztava, which means on the benches. Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda says to him, what good would that do? Does he know, what is he putting it over there in order to hide it? Tony, al gag ha'itztava. Rather, you should learn that in your braisa, the word is al gag ha'itztava, on the roof of the itztava, and that way that way people will be able to see it from far. In fact, by the way, there's a different Gemara in Sukkah where this Tana does the other way around, where you have it talks over there about how people would bring their lulavim to the Beis Mikdash before Shabbos Sukkos, because they take the lulav all 7 days in the Beis Mikdash and on Shabbos as well, and they would put them on the itztava in order to keep them until Shabbos morning, and there you have the other way around where it's supposed to be al gav ha'itztava, because you need to put them on the benches. They want to put them under the roof so they don't dry out, and the Tana says al gag ha'itztava, and Rabbi Yehuda corrects him. So I think Tosfos says over there that actually what happened was the Tana didn't realize Tanoyim, you know, they knew the Mishnayos and Braisos by heart. They weren't always such Talmid Chachamim themselves. So when he taught the first one and taught it the wrong way, and Rabbi Yehuda corrected him, so now he thought the correction applies to both of them. So now Rabbi Yehuda had to point out that no, it's the other way. It's the other way around. In the case of the loving, you want al gav ha'itztava. You want it on the benches under the roof so they don't dry out. Here you want an al gag ha'itztava on the roof in order that people can see it from far. Okay. So what's about these benches and these colonnades over here? Omer Rachva, Omer Rav Yehuda, Harabayis Stov Kofel Hoya. The Harabayis was made with a double stov. A stov is this kind of thing. There's a Greek word for this kind of arrangement where you have an area with pillars with pillars in front of it and a roof on top. So they had a double thing like that. We learned similarly in a braisa that the Harabayis was a stov kofel. Rachva, by the way, was a Talmud of the Rav Yehuda, the Amora that we just said, who corrected the Tana. However, in the Gemara, he's calling him here Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfos says because he was his Rabbi Muvhak, Rav Yehuda, the Amora, even though he didn't have smicha, was Rachva's main Rebbe. Therefore, Rabbi Rachva, out of respect, called them Rabbi Yehuda, even though really he's usually Rav Yehuda.
Right.
Because everyone in Bava was only Rav, right. Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana says, Istivonis Hoyanikris, this kind of arrangement was called an Istivonis Stov Lefnim Mistov. There was one stov within another one. In other words, they had one row of benches with a roof around the Harabayis, and then they had another row further in than that. And that's not in the picture over here, right? So the point is that they would put these chalas on the roof of that, and that way everybody could see them from a distance. Now, we said in the mission of Psulos, we said that these chalas were posel. So, Amai Psulos, why were they posel? And in particular, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be saying that every year they had this. How is it that every year they have chalas of a toda that are posel? Because you had a lot of them, a lot of extra toidas, because anybody who has to bring a toida, they can't bring it on Erev Pesach. They can't bring it on Erev Pesach. They can't bring it during Pesach itself because the Torah includes 10 loaves of chametz. They can't, as we're going to discuss soon, they can't bring it on Erev Pesach either for the same reason, because they could bring it in the morning, but then it's going to be also to eat in the afternoon. So therefore, so anybody who brings a Korban Torah, the latest they can bring it is the 13th of Nisan. So therefore, you have a lot of extra Torahs that are being brought, much more than any other day during the year. So therefore, since you have a lot of them, nifsalis belina. So they end up becoming posel with lina because you have you only have a day and a night to eat them. You only have a day and a night to eat them. So therefore, inevitably, when it comes the morning of the 14th of Nisan, you inevitably have some that people didn't manage to finish in time, and therefore they became posel, and therefore now they have them available to use as signals for this. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Ein Mevi'in Toda B'Chagah Matzos, you're not allowed to bring a Korban Toda during Pesach, Mipnei Chometz Shabbat, because of the Chometz in it, because you have 10 loaves that come with it are Chometz. So the Gemara asks Pshita, obviously that would be a reason you can't bring during Pesach. Why do we need a Braisa to tell us that? And the answer is Amar of Adaba Abba, Hocha B'Yodalara Skinen. Here we're talking about, we don't just mean that you can't bring it on Pesach itself. It means you can't even bring it on Yodalad Nisan. The Tana of this Braisa holds, you're not allowed to make it that Kodshim are more likely to become posel. Now, in this case, a Toda usually can be eaten for the whole day you brought it, as well as the following night, until Chatzos or until Alois HaShachar, according to the different opinions. Like this, though, the deadline for eating it on a Daraisa level is going to be 6 hours in the day, and the Rabbanon even earlier than that. So if you bring a Toda out of Pesach morning, then you're making it. There's only a very short amount of time in which to eat the chametz of it, and you're not allowed to do that. So therefore, because of that, the Kulei Alma B'Shloisha Osa Maisalu, therefore, anybody who needs to bring a Toda brings it on the 13th of Nisan, or Metoche in Merubas, and because you have a lot of them, Nifsalis Belina, you can't find enough people to eat all of them, and therefore, inevitably, some of it ends up becoming noiser. So Rashi points out, after all, I mean, these two chalas, they have to be posel because we're putting them up there and we're leaving one of them there at least until the time of Biur Chometz, and then we're burning it. We can't do that if they were completely kosher. How could we take kodshim like that are perfectly able to be eaten and do that? So it has to be that they were posel, and it has to be they were posel, we're saying, because of lina. This that we're saying over here, that you can't bring a toda on Erev Pesach, and on Pesach, by the way, is why we don't say Mizmor L'Soda on those days. Same idea. And that's also why we don't say it Erev Yom Kippur. Same problem, because you're also taking away time from eating it, because like this, if you bring a Toda on Erev Yom Kippur, like this, usually you would have until Chatzos, or until Alois HaShachar, of that night to eat it, but here you have to stop by Shkia. So therefore, so the same thing, you can't bring a Toda Erev Pesach, which is why, Erev Yom Kippur, which is why we don't say Mizmor L'Soda then either. Okay, so that's one explanation of why these loaves are posel, and therefore that we can use them as a signal and eventually burn them. Mishum Rabbi Yanai Amru, however, in the name of Rabbi Yanai, they didn't like that explanation. They didn't have to say that it's really posel as far as lina. Ksheira saw you, really in a certain sense they were kosher. Why are they called posel? Because they didn't shech the korban that was supposed to go with them. Now you have a concept like this with kodshim. Certain kinds of psulim of kodshim are it's psul begufay, the thing itself became posel, and then the din is you burn it right away. So in this case, for example, when we said the loaves were left over, they were noiser, then you burn it. On the other hand, then you have kodshim that became posel because of a side issue. So then the din is, you don't burn them right away. You need ibur tsura. You need to first ibur tsura. Different Rishonim talk about, doesn't mean just leaving it until it becomes noiser and becomes posel. It doesn't mean you leave it until it spoils. Whatever the case, only then can you burn it. So now what happens is, the problem is, when you were makdish these loaves of bread, now they have kedushas domim. They now have the monetary value of them as kodesh. Eventually, you're supposed to shech the korban. And when you shech the korban, at that point, they get kedushas aguf. So here, in this case, the korban wasn't shechted. On purpose? Well, that's what we're going to see. That's what we're going to discuss. Why wasn't the korban shechted? corrupted. So therefore, so what happens is, in other words, so you have the loaves of the Korban Torah, the loaves of chametz and matzah, go through stages as follows. When you first makdish them, they have kedushas damim. Later on, you shech the korban that's associated with them. At that point, they get kedushas haguf. At that point, for example, they would be posel if they were left overnight or if a tevul yom touches them, etc. Then you have eventually the blood of the korban is sprinkled, and at that point, they become mutter to eat. So now, at this point, the korban wasn't shechted for them. So therefore, they end up becoming posel, but it's not a major psul like noiser. It's only this minor psul of that it didn't get kedushas haguf. The Maharam Chalava explains the reason why Rabbi Yannai didn't like the previous explanation is because if they're noiser, why are you leaving them until the fifth hour and burning them? You should be burning them first thing in the morning. They're already posel. It's not a matter of chometz, but just a matter of because they're noiser. You should be burning them first thing in the morning. You shouldn't be keeping them around a few more hours and using them as a signal. Therefore, Rabbi Yannai says we have to be talking about a case where it requires ibur tzura. So the question is v'nishchot. So why don't we shech the korban? What's the problem? The answer is sh'avad azebach. The answer is we're talking about the animal got lost. So therefore we can't shech it. Again, could be because more people than usual are bringing todas on that day. So therefore it's more likely that animals are going to get lost. But whatever it is, the point is that the animal wasn't shechted. So the question is v'nesi zebach acha v'nishchot. So what? Why can't they bring another animal, shecht it as a todah, and then that's that. Then you associate this bread with it, and then this bread gets kedushas haguf, and you go from there. The answer is d'omah zu todah v'zu lachma. The cases we're talking about where a person specifically, when he designated the korban todah, he says this is the animal for the todah, and this specifically is the bread that goes with it. V'chidiraba. Then, therefore, you can't substitute another animal, like Rabba says, d'omah Rabba. Now, if you did like that, and then the bread got lost, maybe, or tameh or what have you, maybe lechem acher, then you're able to bring new bread and associate it with the todah. But the other way around, of the todah ain maybe todah acheres. But if the animal for the todah is lost, you can't substitute another todah for it in this case. My timer, lechem glal todah, vein todah glal lechem. Because the bread is something that comes because of the todah. It's not the other way. The todah tells you to bring a korban todah, and along with it, you have to bring bread. It's not the other way around. You don't bring the bread, and along with it comes the animal for the korban. Therefore, the animal for the korban is the ikker thing, and therefore, you can't substitute it. So again, in this case, if the animal is lost, then that's it. Then the chalos are stuck, and therefore, you have two of them available in order to use for the signal over here. Okay, so the question is, it still only has kedushas adamim at this point. It's only the monetary value of it as kadosh. It doesn't have kedushas aguf yet. So v'nifr kinu v'nap kinu l'cholin. So what if we don't have? We can't substitute another animal. We should be able to be poida this bread, and it becomes cholin, and then you use the money to buy a new animal and new bread. So that doesn't work. So no, we are talking about actually where the korban was shechted, but then what happened? V'nishbach adam. Then what happened is the blood spilled. There is, in fact, that can be associated. The Yerushalmi actually draws an association between that and previously where we said, because there were a lot of them, because there were so many extra todas being brought on that day, there was a much higher likelihood that in the course of bringing the blood to the Mizbeach, that one of them is going to be spilled. And if the blood is spilled, then the korban is possible. But again, since the bread itself is not directly possible, it didn't become noiser, then you're going to need ibur tzura. But once the korban was shechted, then the bread had drushas aguf. Now you can't be poided anymore. Ukaman kerebi. So who would this be like? This would be according to the opinion of Rebbe that once the animal is shechted, and that's already enough to give it drushas aguf, and now you can't be poided the bread anymore, like Rebbe says. Rebbe says when you have two things that are needed in order to be matir something, namely the shchita and the zrika, then one of them can bring something else up one mila where it gets kedushas aguf without the other one. In other words, this that we said before, that when you shech the korban, then the bread gets kedushas aguf, and later on you sprinkle the blood of the korban, then it becomes mutar la'achila. Rebbe is the one who holds that. The Tanya, kivtze atzeres, the sheep that come as the shalmei tzibur on Shavuos together with the shtei alechem, Ein mekadshinas halachem ela b'shchita. They're only mekadish the bread only when you shech the animals. Ketzad. So what does that mean? Shochtan l'shmon. If you shechted the animals l'shmon for the sake of having in mind that it's for the korban of the that's for the shalmei tzibur, v'zorak domen l'shmon, and you also did the zrika and all the other avodas l'shmon, kiddush alechem, then the bread becomes kiddush. Now it has kiddushes aguf, and now it has all the rules of a korban that lino will passel it, tzvuyoyim will passel it, and so on and so forth. Shochtan shaloy lishmon, but if you shechted the animal shaloy lishmon, v'zorak domen shaloy lishmon, and you did the zrika shaloy lishmon, so the korban itself is kosher, except that you have to bring another one, because most korbanos, the rule is, if you shecht them shaloy lishmon, the korban is still kosher, except that loy olu labaylim, but loy kiddush alechem, the bread does not become kodesh because you need the shechita and the zrika to be done the right way. Now, what happens? Shochtan l'shmon v'zorak domen shaloy l'shmon. What happens if you did the shchita l'shma but the zrika not shalat l'shma? Lechem kodesh ve'enei kodesh divrei Rebbe. Then Rebbe says now the bread is in an intermediate state. It's kodesh. It has kedushas haguf, but it's not kodesh, and therefore you can't be poyda anymore. In general, by the way, you can only be poyda animals of kodesh. When it comes to things that have kedushas haguf, you can only be poyda animals, because it has to be hamada v'harocha. It has to be that you stand it up in front of the kohen and he evaluates it, and you can't do that. You can't do that with inanimate objects. So therefore, so Rebbe says the bread is kodesh, that it becomes possible that that you can't be poyda anymore, among other things. Ve'enei kodesh, but it's not fully kodesh in the sense that it's not mutter to eat. Divrei Rebbe, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, La'olam ene kodesh alechem ad yishchet lezman v'yizrik domen l'shman. No, the bread doesn't even get any kedusha at all, kedusha zaguf, unless he shechts it l'shma and does the zrika l'shma. So according to Rebbe, therefore you can have the bread can be in this intermediate state where it has kedusha zaguf, but you can't eat it. Namely, because the blood spilled, and therefore you never accomplished the zrika. But according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, it sounds like that doesn't work. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, it sounds like if the blood spilled, you never did zrika. Therefore, until the zrika is done and it's done lishma, the bread doesn't become kaddish. So it would mean then that Rabbi Yannai's explanation of why these chalas are possible, that they're not really possible, it's just that they're stuck in this intermediate state, would be only according to Rebbe. However, the Gemara says, no, afilu tamer Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. No, you could even make it work according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, because you could say the case is not where the blood spilled to begin with out of the neck of the animal, and they never did Kabbalah in the first place, but rather they were makabalat in a kli, and then they spilled it. So the fact is, it didn't go on the Mizbeach, but Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, Savalei Kavua, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon agrees with his father's Shita, Rabbi Shimon, Da'ama Kola Omid Lizrik Kizoruk Dami. He says if it was going to be sprinkled, then it's considered as if it was sprinkled. So therefore, that now in particular, now obviously to become Mutter, it actually has to be actually sprinkled on the Mizbeach, but to get Kedush Zaguf, it's enough that it was received in a Keli and is on its way to the Mizbeach. So therefore, at that point, once it was received in a keli and that was done l'shma, then Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon is going to consider as if it was spilled on them, as if it was poured, as if it was sprinkled on the mizbeach. Now, in the end, it wasn't sprinkled because it landed on the ground. So now the bread is possible, but it's not fully possible, and therefore it needs ibur tzura. Therefore, you need to leave it over for the next day. And therefore, you can use it as the signal and burn it with the chametz. Actually, Tosfos says, if you did the actual zrika or the actual shchita, for that matter, if you did it shaloi l'shman, then it shows. It shows l'mafreya that it was possible all along. But here, where you just spilled it, then we can still say kazoruk dummy, that it's considered as though it was sprinkled. To the extent that even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, it makes the bread have kedushas aguf, and now you can't be poyded anymore. So Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi over here that because it was Yud Gimel Nissen and everybody's bringing the Todas that they're going to have to, therefore, especially they were all Olo L'Regel, therefore, inevitably one of them is going to spill. Technically, by the way, if it spills from the Mizrach onto the ground, technically they could collect it off the ground and sprinkle it on the Mizbeach, but practically speaking, it would be kind of hard to do that. I think you have a machlokas in Zvachim whether you're allowed to do that or not. Actually, I think the Chacham would say you can't. Okay. Fine. Tana Mishum Rabbi Elazar Amru. We learn a third possibility. In the name of Rabbi Elazar, they said, actually, Ksheira saw you. No, these loaves that we're talking about, that they used as a signal, were completely kosher. But Kol Zman Shemunachas Kolam Oichlin, still, as long as they left them there, everybody would be eating chametz. Nitla Achas Man, once they took away one toilin, then they would suspend the chametz, Lo Oichlin Lo Serfin. They wouldn't eat the chametz, but they wouldn't burn it either. Nitla Shtein, Eschilu Kolan Serfin. Once they removed both of them, then everybody would begin burning. Now, then, in that case, if they're kosher, how could they do that? How could they leave them up there, and eventually they're going to be burning them? Tosfos says they held like Reb Shimon Gamliel that you're allowed to eat truma until the end of the fifth hour. Lachme Toda is also like truma. What they would do is when we say they took it away and everybody would start burning, they would actually take it away a couple of minutes early. A couple of minutes before the end of the fifth hour, they would take that one away and then they'd eat it quickly. Koinim Zrizimahim, after all. And then everybody would know once you allow the amount of time after it was removed and the time it takes to eat it, then everybody would begin burning chametz. Tanya, we learned in a brayse, Abba Sholem, Shtei Poros Hayu Choshes Bahara Mishcha. They also had on that day as a simon, they had two cows plowing on Hara Mishcha, which is Hara Zesi. Kol's mancha Shtei and Choshes, as long as both of them are plowing, Kol Amoichlin, then everybody would eat. Nitla Achas Mehen, once one of them was taken away, Tolin, then they'd suspend the chametz, Lo Oichlin, Lo Sofin, they're not eating and they're not burning. Nitla Shtei, and once both of them were taken away, Eschilu Kolam Sofin, then everybody burns their chametz. That would be an additional signal that they would use. Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that we're going to learn later on in our Masechta that there were different places where they had, we touched on it on Daf Beis, that there are places where the minhag was, everybody agrees that you can't do malacha erev Pesach after Chatzos because it's the time of bringing the korban Pesach, but are you allowed to in the morning? There were places of different minhagim. Yerushalayim, you have people gathering there from all over the place, places where the minhag is to work and places where the minhag isn't. So therefore in Yerushalayim, they would have to be machmir and not work the morning of erev Pesach. So therefore, how do they have cows plowing? So the Yerushalmi says, I mean, they were actually plowing. They just made it look like they're plowing. They're not actually doing malacha. The Yerushalmi also mentioned, by the way, a couple of other signals that they would use. They had candles burning. And on Shabbos, since you can't light candles, they would hang up sheets. So they had a number of different signals to tell people when you can eat chametz and when you can burn it. Well, it's during the morning, obviously, yeah. Oh, you said candles burning during the daytime. Yeah, okay. Shraga batira mayani, but I guess it would do some good. I don't know. Yerushalayim is a big, Yerushalayim is a big place. Also, they may have needed different signals in different parts of the city in order for everybody to know. Yeah. Although what I'm wondering is why they needed to do that. We know they blew shofar to announce when Shabbos begins. Why couldn't they just, like we have the siren goes off when it's sofsman achilas chametz and sofsman biur chametz. Why don't they just use a shofar for that purpose? I don't know. No, there's no reason people would be mixed up with Erev Shabbos because much earlier with
how would you know between one challah and two challah?
They could blow different patterns for one versus the other, but yeah, I don't know. All right.
They can have a microphone.
All right, Eshkoyach, everyone.